This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Volkov is victorious in Rotterdam. UFC 215 is upon us in Edmonton, Alberta. We'll discuss the state of MMA in Canada with our in-studio guest, Antonio Pato Carvalho. And we also have some other Canadians on the show today. Gavin Tucker, featherweight phenom, and the debut of Arjun Buller, Commonwealth gold medalist for freestyle wrestling. That's a pretty...
That's an impressive resume.
Games. Yeah, that's a big resume. And also a bronze medalist at the Pan Am Games.
Yeah, I'm a striker, so I'm hoping he's improved his striking for his UFC debut.
Get some KOs under his belt.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. Of his six wins, three of them have come by knockout. I'm sure a lot of it's set up from his wrestling,
right,
a lot of good ground and pound.
Yeah.
But he's a beast, so I'm excited to see him finally get his shot in the UFC.
For sure. So let's welcome in Antonio. Antonio, thanks for joining us in studio.
Thanks for having me.
So you... were a four-time UFC fighter, four times in the octagon, one stint in the UFC, went 2-2 during your stint in the UFC, and your last fight was against the guy who's now in the top 10, Darren Elkins.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm actually happy for Darren, believe it or not. He was one of those guys that after we were done fighting, he actually came into my dressing room and was like, hey, you okay? Everything's okay? And I was just like, you know what? Let it go, bud, and just move forward. And you know what? He did. Look at him now. He's top 10, so good for him.
Yeah, went over to Team Alpha Male and it really changed his career.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you can't go wrong when you get a group of killers like that on the mat, right? You're going to have to improve, and I think it was a good move for him for sure.
So it's been, about 4 years since you last fought in the UFC. What have you been up to these days? I know you're an instructor now in Oshawa at Bruckman MMA.
Yeah, I do that, and another small gym as well that's affiliated with Bruckman Martial Arts as well, called Cal Samard. I teach their jiu-jitsu mostly, and I kind of had to get a real job and kind of move into the real world and do that as well, but I try to keep a nice little balance of everything. So yeah, I'm still involved in martial arts in general, still, for
how,
sure.
How closely do you keep up with the UFC and all the different events?
There's so many events now, it's hard to keep up with all of them, but I try my best. Anything that seems interesting to me or if I hear something about somebody who, you know, if somebody makes a comment, I definitely, if I didn't catch it at the time, I will definitely go and look for it to see what they're talking about, because I'm still a fan of the sport at the end of the day.
This Rotterdam card is the 16 cards in 18 weeks.
That's
crazy. To wrap up the year.
I think there's a show a week now.
Yeah, almost.
Almost until December.
Yeah. So there were 3 weeks off between the last UFC card, which was in Mexico City, seems like forever ago,
yeah.
Until Mayweather-McGregor, or until this card, rather, until this last Rotterdam card, there were three straight weekends off with no UFC. And now, until the end of the year, there's only four weekends that don't have a UFC event.
Yeah, it's been crazy, to be honest with you, but it's good. It's just showing how the UFC can accommodate so many shows and put on so many good fights, and just shows how much the sport's growing to have all the athletes to be able to do it.
So when you were released from the UFC, Antonio, you had written that they just had too many fighters at featherweights. You'd only had one loss, and it was a controversial loss at that, a loss that many people thought the refs had stopped it early. In today's UFC, you probably would have been able to stick around for, I mean, Thibaut Gauthier, who fought this weekend, had lost four in a row and just won his first fight in the UFC. So how have things changed between when you were in the organization and what it's like now in your eyes?
I think I was just part of that transitional period where you know, you sort of had to have a name. You sort of had to get on that social media and get your name out there. And I think I was just sort of a product of that, and that's why they just, you know, I wasn't that guy. When I got into the sport, that's not what it was about. And I had – that was probably the most difficult part of the transition for me, to not so much being in a big show per se, but just in general. I'm a pretty quiet guy. I'm a martial artist. That's kind of how I characterize myself right off the bat. And like mixed martial arts was just kind of like the afterthought of the stuff that I was working on, and I had a lot of fun with it, but I think I could see it while I was, you know, where they bring all the fighters up to the summit in Vegas, and a lot of it was self-promotion, how to promote yourself as a product and get your name out there. And I should have sort of seen that coming, and I didn't. And again, like, I think it just took me to falter once, and then the UFC was kind of like, you know, their exact words to me was, you belong, but we don't know what to do with you. And at the time, the females were coming in, and they were shifting everything. And I think even in Canada, there was a drought for the UFC in Canada, you know. And, you know, Mark retired a little bit prior to me being cut as well. So, again, they're just kind of, I think they were just moving the product somewhere else. And obviously with the sale, things changed even more with that. And I think now it's more name value than anything, and just, you know, keeping your record intact. I think when I started, it's just different. It wasn't so much about that. So
I just think your resume itself speaks for it. I didn't think you really had to. I mean, if you look at Antonio, I've known Antonio since I was a little kid. And you have been one of the guys I've looked up to in my career. So you've given more to the sport than most people. I mean, you left Canada and lived in Japan to, you know, get fights. You were ranked top in the world. So I don't think a lot of people understand what you did for the sport before the featherweights went to the UFC.
You had a win over Hatsu Hayoki, which in now people would say, well, Hayoki lost a bunch of the UFC. Back then, he was the guy outside of the UFC. He was the guy that the UFC wanted. It took them a while to lure him to the UFC, and he was considered the best featherweight prospect in the world.
Yeah, I think at the time it was one of those moments where, you know, when I did fight him and when it was very, very significant, he had, again, top quality wins against very good fighters. So I was very lucky to have that moment. There were other names, of course, that were still around. It's just that, you know, MMA wasn't as central as it is now, with the UFC being as big, where everyone kind of comes to one spot. Back then, it was kind of like the Wild West, right? Where you know, it was some people fought in a cage, some people fought in a ring. The rules were different. Some, you know, soccer kicks were legal, or knees were legal on the ground, and so this sort of, it was very difficult to sort of figure out who really were the best, just because of, for that reason. Yeah, again, I'm very happy what I was capable of doing at that point, and my goal at the end of the day was to sort of, you know, get the featherweights on the map, and I felt that was what I did well, was that I literally went to other people's backyard and fought them, and I sort of created that line for the rankings. If you look far back enough, you can actually see how the rankings sort of came out for the featherweights, and I was a part of that, and I'm very proud of that.
And you're being shy about it. You were ranked, you know, number one with Uriah Faber, so I mean, you got to think like you're being very humble about it, but you're definitely one of the ones to put even MMA in Canada. You're one of the pioneers.
And look at this weekend. I mean, we've got Gavin Tucker on the card. Jeremy Kennedy is undefeated. He's looking great, and those are Canadian featherweights that have followed in your footsteps.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy to see some, again, amazing talent. There was a bit that there were no featherweights, especially when Mark Hominick retired, and myself not being there anymore. It was kind of, you know, there are no featherweights, no Canadian featherweights. So now we actually have two incredible featherweights, both undefeated. And I think they have a lot to show. They're young, talented, can pretty much take the fight anywhere they want. So it's the new generation is well taken care of, that's for sure. They certainly know what to do when they get out there, and it is an amazing thing to see for sure. I'm very happy to see that.
And I think with TKO coming back in Montreal, which is the base, originally was the base for a lot of the Canadian MMA fighters. You had, you know, GSP fighting there, Richard Monkey Nanku, Justin Bruckman, like all the Canadian pioneers fought in this TKO organization. And then there wasn't really an organization for Canadian fighters to get fights, which has always been a challenge in Canada. So once TKO now is opening up, they're on UFC Fight Pass, I believe, and they're really building Canadian athletes. So I think we're going to start seeing a bigger wave of Canadians, hopefully, going into the UFC.
We were going to get to this a little bit later on with the state of MMA in Canada, but let's dive right in because we're already kind of on the topic.
An exploration of MMA north of the border. This is Canadian Focus.
When you look at the sport right now, do you feel like, you know, there was obviously the peak when it was at the Rogers Center, sold out stadium, then there was a dip, you know, and it was a dip for a fairly long time. There were years where they didn't come to Toronto. You would have thought it, when you looked at the Rogers Center, that Toronto would have been a destination every single year. And there were years in a row where they didn't go there. And Canada, I guess, is only doing about 3 or 4 events per year. Do you think that there's a resurgence happening now?
I don't know. I'll let Antonio go on this. He'll probably know better than I will.
I mean, we're certainly starting to see the talent being signed, which is a good sign, I think, in general. Obviously, they're signing great Canadian fighters to their cards, which means they are in need of Canadian fighters to fill in Canadian events. So I'm certainly hoping that they are going to try to bring the UFC, you know, back to Canada more often. I think, like I said, there's a lot of hungry young fighters, very talented, that want to be seen. So it feels that way, and I certainly hope it stays that way.
Could it be without GSP, the market has decreased? I mean, when we're at the, you know, the Rogers Center, you had GSP headlining the event.
Yeah, he's been away for 4 years. Who's been the guy? Who's been the guy?
We really
from Canada?
Haven't had a huge Canadian star, with Rory McDonald now being in Bellator. Who is the Canadian star to be able to put that, the seats and the people in the seats?
And you've also got to look at Rory when he was fighting. I mean, he was in the co-main event of that card in Vancouver, and people were leaving during the main event, and I think it only did about like 150,000 buys.
Yeah.
So was Rory that big of a draw? I mean, Rory as a fighter is unbelievable. I mean, he's so entertaining to watch.
It's the outside with Rory that seems to be the issue. Like Antonio's mentioning, he doesn't seem to promote himself as well as the other guys.
Right.
Yeah, again, as we discussed before the show, it was, you know, that's certainly an important aspect of the game now. And I think GSP has certainly did everything in his power to be able. I mean, he's still I love GSP because he's actually kept that still that the image that he wants, and he markets himself as a martial artist. I'm a huge fan of that. He's just that guy that I think people can get on board with. I don't see why you wouldn't get on board with him. And I'm certainly hoping with him being back that he's going to draw that fan base back in. And I think it will happen.
Do you think he still has the hype behind his name to put the people in the seats and for those pay-per-view buys?
I think we'll find out. I think it'll sell out. I think MSG is going to sell out regardless. It sold out quickly last year.
But is maybe the Cody Garbrandt-Dillashaw fight bigger than GSP?
This is the interesting thing about it. And that's a good example, because when you look at guys that have gotten into the UFC during the Conor era, for the, you know, I'll call it the Conor era, the last two years, you know, they know about Dillashaw, they know about Garbrandt, and they know about a lot of the other fighters that are going to be on that card, and it's a big card. There's a lot of names on it, but some of them might not have ever seen GSP. They might not be as familiar with him. So I think it's going to be a good card that bridges that gap, where you're going to get people that were like, oh yeah, I know Bisping, I know GSP from when I used to watch the UFC 3-4 years ago. Yeah, I'm interested in tuning into this. Let's see if GSP can move up a weight class and see how he looks. And then you're going to have the other side of the coin, which are guys like, oh, I want to see Cody and TJ, and I've heard that GSP's
more
a legend.
Newer
Let's check it
Connor
out.
Generation,
yeah,
for
so,
sure.
So maybe if they're able to successfully draw from both of those pools, I think it'll be a good night for them. And I think that it'll turn a lot more fans onto the sport. And I think we will see a lot of Canadians re-gravitate to the UFC.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think it is very interesting. You just kind of alluded to it earlier with GSP. It's kind of like, there are actual fans that don't really remember him, like young enough fans that are kind of like, oh yeah, I've heard of him. That guy that used to, that's kind of like, really? It's only been maybe how long? 2-3 years?
4 years.
Four years. Four and a half. So yeah. Like, again, see how quickly things change. And I think there is a curiosity with him coming back to see how he will perform against Michael Bisping. I think it's going to be interesting. And if he wins, certainly I think it's going to pull people in.
Well, with the John Jones situation, if he wins this fight and becomes a two-division champion, he could be considered the best ever.
I agree. And I would have argued that before when he was fighting. In my opinion, he was pound for pound the best fighter at
many
the time.
Many still say that. Yeah, many still say that they think GSP is the best of all time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just look at his resume. I mean, he went through the welterweight division twice, even after he got upset by Matt Serra. He literally went through that division again.
People are forgetting.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
People are forgetting what he's done in the sport and how dominant of a champion he was.
Right.
Combat sports in general, I think, are like that, though. You know, people tend to forget after, you know, 2-3 years, especially now in this generation with so much information going around the internet and all this going on. I think people do forget. And again, before it used to feel more like 5 years, you know, you'd start forgetting things. But now it's like 2-3. People don't remember.
It's just that frequent UFC shows, right? The next show, you forget. You forget who was even on that last card.
And I think it's been 4 years since Anderson Silva's gotten a knockout. So a lot of the people won't remember how great Anderson Silva was. Like, to me, he's perhaps the best. I mean, unfortunately, his drug failure and suspension put a bit of a cloud over that. But I always thought he was the guy. Like, he was the best.
Oh, for sure. We all loved him.
And I think that, you know, GSP says that if he loses, he's going to retire. If he loses against Bisping, he has said that. But I think that if GSP loses and they said to him, come back, fight Anderson Silva, give it one more go. Maybe he'd consider that. I don't know.
Well, money talks too, right?
Yeah. GSP, the reason he says he wants to retire is he doesn't want to be one of these stepping stones now. He doesn't want to fight younger guys and be a guy that they used to put over younger talent.
Well, I hope he's a smart athlete. He's approached, you know, his career so intelligently with, you know, strategic camps, all new science to his, you know, training and starting things new. So I hope he doesn't stay too long in the sport where he's starting to get those long-term damage. And so I think he's intelligent. Hopefully he goes out, you know, on top still and doesn't hang around too much for the money and trying to take these big fights and ruins what he's built, you know, for his whole career.
Yeah, I'm in that same position. I think with him, I don't think he's going to come back unprepared. I mean, it's a question of ring rust when he first steps in there. But I think as far as his preparation is concerned and the people he surrounds himself, I think he's going to be fine. So, I'm certainly hoping to see the old GSP come back and be dominant.
And
for
if,
sure.
if anyone's going to do it, it's GSP, right? He has the mental and physical ability to do it. Not many athletes can, but if anyone's going to do it and come back so dominant after that long period, it's GSP.
And he's been training this whole time. Yeah. You know, I took a little bit of time off after he decided to retire, and then he's just been in the gym.
Apparently,
doing,
look, he's yeah. looking nice and ripped
he's, yeah,
and
he's
thick.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I saw him in Vegas.
Especially, he's not a tall guy either, right? So to pack on a good 185 frame at his height, is that's a lot of
right.
muscle.
I think he's probably around the same height as Yoel Romero.
I think 5'9", no, maybe 5'10".
Yeah, I think Romero's around that height.
Yeah.
But yeah, George looked big. Like when I saw him in Vegas and we interviewed him for TSN.
Well, I know George always walks around maybe 190, 195 at its heaviest. So that's not a bad cut to 185. Like I walk around 200. If I were to go back in the ring, I'd probably go back as a middleweight too.
Yeah, he's walking around at over 200 now, he was saying. Yeah. 202, 203. Which
hopefully,
is about what you want to be for a middleweight.
Hopefully natural, and we don't have another incident. Let's hope.
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't had any incidents. So
well, let's hope.
Won't say
that's what I'm saying. Let's
yeah.
knock on wood. I'm knocking on wood
right.
here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, GSP's always been one of these guys that wanted to bring Vada into the sport. And,
but is he bringing just a 10? Like, he left as soon as they came in, though, too, right?
Well, he wanted to bring Vada in for his fight. And one of the reasons he left is he said he wanted the UFC to clean up the sport and make it, you know, and bust guys that were doing...
I don't know. I still question it. I am always questioning.
Just people that were in the pre-U Saturdays, you mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean...
Well, it's hard not to, right? The testing was... It seemed like it was pretty easy to get around.
Which they called an IQ test at that time, right? Which they called... You know when you're getting tested. You know how long the steroid stays in your system. So, I mean, I hope it doesn't happen. I'm not saying he did or not, but I'm just saying let's hope it stays clean and keeps... these young martial artists wanting to, you know, improve rather than take the easy way out. My opinion.
All right. Well, why don't we rewind to this past weekend, the UFC in Rotterdam. I thought the main event was really exciting. Alexander Volkov victorious over Stefan Struve. He's now going to be the top-ranked under 30 heavyweight, and there aren't a whole lot of them. There's only four of them in the top 15. Heavyweight seems to be an older division. What do you think of Volkov's prospects? He's a former Bellator heavyweight champion. He's only gotten better since then. Do you think he's a guy that can be at the top of the division and potentially get a title shot?
To be honest, I wasn't overly impressed with him against Struve. He got dominated in the first round, you know.
You thought so? I thought the first round could have gone either way.
Well, I mean, he got cut, opened up his eyes, which, you know, he took the knee, got cut. I just didn't see that aggressive power and that solidness that I see from other those other guys like, you know, Ngannou, I think. Like, I
the
mean,
raw, brute
that
power.
Raw brutality, I didn't see that. So for me, it was kind of like he's going to be that guy that wears you out, has to take you into the later rounds, which isn't typically your heavyweight fighter. So I think he's going to do well by being able to beat guys in the later rounds. But was I overly impressed? I think he did well. Am I overly impressed with Stefan Struve? Not so
what
not
happened
so
to
much.
Him using that length?
Well,
that's
again, he had
Semi
Schilt in his corner.
Yeah.
He brought in a taller guy, but I think his training with Henry Hooft, which is his kickboxing coach, everything is about pressure, going forward, going in, where he needs to learn to fight long. Like, you're 7 feet tall, learn to fight long. He's not using his, you know, physical attributes to win his fight. So not overly impressed with Struve, but let's see. Let's give Volkov to the bigger names.
And he's one of these guys that I think is going to have trouble winning on the scorecards, Struve, because when he gets hit, it looks like
his
he gets hit.
Head
yeah, his
rocks.
Head flies backwards.
As Mauro Ranallo always says, Pez dispenses. Yeah. Pez dispenses his head every time. I'm like, you're a big guy. Like, come on. Like, stand your ground. Stay back. I don't know what. Like, it's frustrating for me to see him fight.
But he's so big now, too, and his body's filled out. If you remember when he was, like, 21 and started in the UFC, he was pretty rail thin for a guy that was 6'11". Now he's seven feet tall. He's... I don't know if he's cutting to make 265, but he probably walks around in that area code. He's a bigger guy. He looks like he should be able to do a little bit more damage.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, he just doesn't know how to use his length.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off two wins in a row. I don't want to write him off. I do think that he's a really skilled guy on the ground for that division as well. it didn't really get there. He didn't really try to take it there either, which I think was a mistake. But what were your thoughts, Antonio, from watching it?
It's kind of what Joe was saying. At least from Volkov's perspective, he just kind of – it was in the later rounds where he eventually, kind of wore Struve down. But like Joe was saying, he clearly is not using his length properly. Like, he's not actually catching his punches. Like, not at the end of his punch to get any power, any snap behind it. He's winging, which is very odd for a guy who's 7 feet tall, right?
Yeah.
Like, Sammy Schilt was, for example, he used to use his length. Most of it was off of his lead side.
His front kick.
Yeah, his front kick, and then that jab that would come over. And he would just, stab people to death, basically, in there. And that's how he'd take them out. Again, I think... Sometimes when you're a fighter, I guess you sort of see the opening. I think he did feel the opening, that he could have put him away early, and I think maybe he may have just used up a little too much energy, and by the later, was it the third round, he just kind of withered away, I guess.
I did some betting, and I put Struve to win by TKO. So mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed. So that's why I'm picking
4-1 odds or something.
Yeah, I was like, I'll take it. I was like, I thought his power would have been the difference, to be honest with you. So mm-hmm. I lost that bet.
Well, when you when we look at this card, let's talk about whose stock is up and whose stock is down.
The MMA stock market is open. Whose stock is up and whose is down?
From the main event, do you think it's fair to say that Struve's stock is down?
I agree.
But you don't think Volkov's stock is up?
No, I think it's staying. I need to see more. I need to see a bigger opponent before his stock goes up.
I think just because of his age, his stock goes up. I think the UFC is so hungry for guys under 30 in that division that I would put a stock up.
Yeah, I'm going to keep him neutral.
Yeah, you're going to wait and see.
I'm waiting. We'll revisit it on another episode. Yeah. I'm not sold yet.
Anybody catch your eye this weekend? Whose stock is up?
I'm trying to remember names. I'm sorry.
It's that hard name.
But we were talking about Zabit Magomed Sharipov beforehand.
He's the young featherweight kid.
Yeah,
featherweight. I think he's like six feet tall at least.
6'2".
6'2".
For 145.
And he's,
Like your pal Hatsu Hayoki, who's 5'11 or 6 feet tall.
This kid knows how to use, he's got interesting footwork, a bit of a taekwondo style to mm-hmm. him. It's interesting because he's got a bit of a side stance as well, and he's doing the Showtime Pettis-like techniques off the fence, and he has a good ground game as well. Obviously, he submitted his opponent. I think he's exciting. I like guys like him just because they're entertaining for sure, but at the same time, he has the ability to finish and put guys away. So yeah, I he's someone who definitely caught my, even though I apologize for not remembering his name.
It's probably the longest name in the UFC, so you don't need to really apologize.
But if they want to break into the European market, certainly start grabbing guys like him and being like, look, let's shove this guy down their throats because this kid's entertaining. He's
like a Yair Rodriguez, right?
Yeah.
Like that same kind of style.
Yeah, very unorthodox, very unpredictable. You know, with the UFC potentially going to Russia in 2018, Volkov winning, Zabit looking good.
Five Russians won that night.
Yeah, couldn't have come at a better time.
That's what Volkov said in his post-fight. He said, hey, I want to fight, doesn't matter who, but let's go to Russia. We had five winners, dominant victories, so let's go to Russia. So
and
we'll see.
With Zabit, he's training with Mark Henry and Frankie Edgar, Eddie Alvarez, Edson Barboza, as well as Dagestan Top Team, which is a really good camp in Dagestan. This guy's got a bright future. He was considered one of the top prospects going into the fight. But you were talking about odds earlier and betting on Struve. His odds were he was under a 3-1 favorite going against the guy who had just won on the Contenders Series and took the fight on short notice. I thought that was interesting. I would have thought he would have been a 7 or 8-1 favorite going in, given the hype behind him.
Yeah, he just looked great. Definitely stock up for me. And I appreciate, again, being a kickboxing background, when guys can go in and utilize some good striking right away, you get my attention. And the fact that he can wrestle and do well on the ground, stock up for me.
Yeah, one guy that also that I've been talking about for a while that I think has looked really good is Darren Till. And I thought he really made a statement. Easy, unanimous decision against a tough opponent.
He took some shots, though.
He does in every fight. He
took a lot of low kicks. I think it's just his white skin, too. Like, those low kicks.
Oh, his leg was
bruising
torn
up. I think it's the white, that really white skin of his. You slap a few low kicks on it that's going red and bruised, but... He did well. I'm impressed.
Valkovich is a good opponent. He's not an easy task, and I thought he rose to the occasion. Another guy whose stock is up, Mirbek Taisimov. With that one punch KO over Felipe
Silva. He got a
Silva.
Performance of the night bonus as well.
Yeah. And
well done.
Yeah, much earned.
He looked really good. Marion Renault had a good, she did well, with a last minute replacement. I'm attracted to her story just because she's a school teacher. She's fighting to support her son. Like, Antonio and I were talking about even GSP. We're attracted to what they do outside of the ring, and mm-hmm. she's one of those people that caught my eyes, just a positive role model.
Well, I thought that two of the people that lost on short notice looked really good, and that was Rob Wilkinson, who lost to Bahar Dzada. He looks like he could have a future. Really big guy for the middleweight division. Yeah, it was fun to watch. And I thought Talita Bernardo Nogueira looked good.
She looked okay,
given that she took the fight on like a week's notice.
Yeah, I thought she almost had a few submissions she could have done. But yeah, she just looked a little flat trying to conserve herself.
She was jumping into that triangle pretty fearlessly.
She had to. I guess that was her only chance to do well. But good job on Renault on staying composed and getting that TKO finish.
All right, well, let's jump ahead to our next subject. UFC 215 this weekend in Edmonton. Demetrius Johnson looking to break the record for the most consecutive title defenses in UFC history, tied right now with Anderson Silva. I don't know how easy it's going to be, though. I think Ray Borg is a really game opponent. He's a young guy. He's being really overlooked. I think he's a 7 or 8 to 1 underdog in this fight. People think that this is going to be a gimme for Demetrius, but I'm not so sold. I think that if this gets into scrambles and it gets into some nitty-gritty, Ray Borg is a guy that can pose some real challenges. And you see with guys that are that age, 23, 24, every fight they get that much better. They learn so much more. And Borg's at Jackson Wink now. He's at a better camp. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think you're hopeful.
Do you guys think I'm playing promoter here?
You're playing promoter.
I'm boosting up Borg?
I think so.
I've got no vested interest in people watching this card.
It just happens every time someone fights Demetrius Johnson. This is the next guy that has the chance. It's the same story every time.
I didn't think Wilson Hayes had much of a chance.
I don't know. I still think there's...
I think the odds might be a little bit too long on this one. I feel like Borg is a better opponent than people are giving him credit for.
You can't write him off, but I still think it's going to be a dominant for DJ.
I did have somebody tell me in Vegas, who I won't name names, but he's connected to the organization, say there was a better chance of Connor knocking out Floyd than Borg winning. When I say connected to the organization, I don't mean he works for the organization, but he follows the sport closely.
He's got the inside scoop. I like it.
Yeah, but I don't agree with that. I honestly, because I was saying to him, I think Borg is a guy that's going to could give him some troubles. He's a tricky guy. He's never been finished. It's a 5-round fight. I mean, that plays well to Demetrius's in Demetrius's advantage, since Borg has had trouble with weight cutting before. But I'm interested to see what happens. And the weight cutting thing is going to be interesting to see, because Borg has missed weight twice. We do have Cejudo and Hayes on the card.
Yep.
So if something happens, I wouldn't be shocked if Cejudo has to step in on late notice. Another guy who's had trouble cutting weight. But yeah.
I think you pretty much already hit the nail on the head on that one. I think as this fight goes later into the rounds, I think Borg's going to have a much more difficult time with Johnson. I think he's just going to eventually start picking him apart. I'm usually that guy that tries not to side with one or the other, but I don't know. It's hard not to side with Demetrius Johnson. He's just so well-rounded. And
we've been having this debate about, is he pound for pound the best?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't take Jones into account, because I would say it's Jones. I just think Jones is head and shoulders above everybody else. But, of course, he has his problems right now.
He's been tainted, that's for sure.
Yeah, more than once.
But a lot of people, listening to a lot of podcasts, a lot of experts and analysts, they don't rate him as the pound for pound, I guess just because of his size, his opponents. Where do you guys put DJ on pound for pound?
That's an interesting point, because the level of competition is something you've got to look at. He's stopped Benavidez twice, who I think is his toughest challenger. I think Benavidez is the clear number two guy in the division behind Demetrius, and he stopped him twice.
I think after he put him away the second time is when I really thought, you know what, Demetrius by far probably pound for pound the best. I mean, and it's funny because behind the scenes, I'm not talking about people who just analyze fights, but like the fighters, like amongst ourselves, when we're in a room, we usually will say Demetrius is pound for pound the best, just based on the skills that he brings to the table, his conditioning, his ability to sort of go from one range to the next, from his wrestling to his striking to his submissions, to he's just that complete package. And I think that's what we look at. And for me, he is pound for pound the best.
I feel like you're not sold. So if you're not sold, who else in the conversation?
Well, that's the other issue too. Like, who else is in the conversation? I would have put John Jones up there. I would obviously have GSP up there when in his prime, Anderson Silva in his prime. But right now,
Nunes is overlooked, I feel. And she's fighting. I mean, I think if she gets past Shevchenko, she's I mean, people talked about how Ronda was pound for pound number one for a while, or she was in the conversation. But she Nunes has more first round wins than Ronda does.
Yeah, she has like 9 or something.
Six. I think it's six in the UFC.
Yeah, but 9 in her career, which is crazy.
Yeah. She's a killer.
She is. I wasn't overly impressed with her first fight with Shevchenko. Like that third round.
Well, she dominated the first two rounds.
Yeah, she got a, I think two judges gave her a 10-8 in the second round.
Cardio is another reason why Demetrius is in the mix. Because even if you look at Connor, his cardio against Diaz failed him. Nunes' cardio has always been a question mark.
Which this,
even
is gonna, this next one's a five-rounder, right? Which is going to play to Shevchenko's favor.
Yeah, I haven't seen it with Woodley because he's gone five rounds, but although he's been very economical with his striking and his energy.
Pretty boring, to preserve
let's
be honest.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's not really in the mix, I don't think, either. I don't think a lot of people give him that much credit, unfortunately. I'm a big fan of Woodley's and what his resume is and how much he's defended the title since winning it. And I think that gets overlooked. But who else is there to talk about right now other than Demetrius? Unless you're going to bring in Jones.
Well, if we're going to talk about
Miocic, maybe?
Sure. I mean,
he does have loss, but he does have a loss.
He could break the heavyweight defenses record of 2.
Yeah, seriously. Which I think he will.
Yeah. I don't know who's going to beat. The only guy that I think could beat Miocic right now is Ngannou. Ngannou. Yeah. I mean, the guy's just got such an aggressive style. That said, he's still a bit raw.
Well, Velasquez in his prime.
Velasquez
in his prime before all those shoulder injuries and surgeries.
Back injuries.
But are we talking like
if we're talking
now?
If we're talking here and now, it's got to be. If it's all time, we've got a big conversation.
Well, yeah,
we
don't here and now.
We would have to talk all day.
Here and now for me, DJ, by far.
I think so too. I just don't see who else you can put in there.
I mean, maybe after GSP fights and we see what he brings to the table, then maybe we can discuss that. But until then, as of right now, for me, DJ.
Another guy to look at though is Holloway. I mean, Holloway, aside from that loss to Conor, he's pretty much cleaned out the division before he was even the champion.
That I'll agree with, too. I think that
true. Good
I think
points.
Yeah,
the division
amazing.
Of killers.
Absolutely.
And beats Aldo. And it's not like, you know, if Conor was 13 seconds, people say, oh, it's suspect, who knows. I mean, I don't agree with that, but people can make that case. With Holloway, he clearly beat Aldo.
I would put him certainly in the mix too, for sure. I don't know that I would put, again, it's just because time will tell with him, obviously. I mean,
he's still young too.
As he continues to defend, then maybe he'll come into the conversation. I think he certainly has the potential. I mean, he's already there, basically. But, I mean, it's the longevity side of it, right? See how long. I think he will be a fighting champion, as he's already said he would be. I would like to see him fight Conor again, for sure, because it was competitive. And as much as people... you know, like to say, oh, well, Connor was injured. Well, he was injured as well. They're both injured. So, I mean, it just kind of came down to Connor being able to get the nod, really, in that fight when they fought.
Yeah.
So I'm curious.
Connor also had a torn ACL in the first round and took him down a bunch of times, which is surprising to me. But Holloway was a different fighter back then. He was
absolutely.
Much younger.
He's progressed. Again, you talk about the progression of these young fighters. He's one of those guys. I remember watching him saying, wow, a lot of potential. And then as I watched him, it just more and more impressive, you know, whether his striking was improving, all of a sudden he's submitting guys too, taking them, you know, into the later rounds.
His cardio's held up
for
5 rounds.
Yeah, he's an incredible fighter. And you know what, for sure, I think down the road we might be able to talk about him being pound for pound one of the best out there.
So let's move on to Nunes and Shevchenko. I think the only thing that's really going against Nunes for this fight is her pulling out of 213. I think once the week of the fight hits and media starts grilling her about her sinusitis and stuff, that can be a real distraction for a fighter. Do you agree?
Well, I understand how bad the sinus infections are before fights. I got them every time I fought. And I remember some of my last fights literally having to, like, just before I'm going out into the fight, having to blow my nose and getting chunks of phlegm and... just because it's all clogged up, and I couldn't breathe out of my nose, I'm having to breathe out of my mouth, and it sucks. It's not easy, and it's when you're a champion, you don't want to not be at your best. So I understand how severe it could be and how it could affect her performance. So I'm okay with her pulling out, but I don't know. As a champion, you're going to be thrown with so much crap, and you know, I think she's strong enough mentally to go through it.
Yeah, the commentators for your fight. Joe's tired 30 seconds into the fight. He's breathing through his mouth.
Yeah, and having to blow crap out of my nose between rounds. Did you find that, Antonio? Did you get sick before your fights?
I have at some point. Yeah, I mean, it's I think a lot of that has to do with weight cutting too, in my opinion.
Stress, weight cutting,
everything. Like your immune system's so weak by the time you get to that fight because you break yourself down during that camp. So it's very easy for us to get sick.
And all the bacteria in gyms, and you're constantly rolling with people and clinching up, and it's very easy.
It, you know, I can understand why Amanda Nunes pulled out of that fight. I mean, she is the champion. I mean, you don't want to go out there and have a poor performance, you know. And you mentioned that,
that's very true because you're compensated way more as a champion with the Reebok deal, the apparel deal. Obviously, that was a big pay-per-view, and she probably would have gotten points for that pay-per-view. It was considered an international fight week, which was one of their bigger cards of the year. It ended up not being quite as good with that fight off the card. But as a champion, she has way more incentives to stay champion.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't want to give it up for a sickness. It sucks. I mean, it sucks for the fans. It sucks for the organization. It sucks for Shevchenko, but... I mean, you got to look at Nunes and saying, hey, she wants to keep that belt. She's worked so hard. It's her dream. And to give it up based on being sick, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, me too.
Who do you guys lean towards in that fight? Because, we talked about odds again. This is basically an even money fight. I think Shevchenko is a small favorite, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I she's actually a kickboxing champion in China, in Kunlun, her champion. Like, but I didn't see that striking in her fight, to be honest with you. I think she's... still very hesitant in her MMA striking. She's beat some the top girls in kickboxing, being aggressive, coming forward, but that MMA has really held her striking back, which really you saw Nunes trying to use her kicks in that first fight. But I think those last three rounds can go to Shevchenko. So for me, it comes down to the conditioning and of Nunes.
I think one thing Nunes is going to use to her advantage is her ability to take Shevchenko down. Not that she's going to shoot takedowns constantly, but being able to just the knowledge that Shevchenko will have that Nunes can take it to the ground, and given what happened in the last fight on the ground, Nunes can use that as a way
to slow her striking down,
and also boost her own striking. And her power is unbelievable for that division.
She was good. She was fighting on the outside, the way she stays long, and you saw Shevchenko really like hesitant, stalking. Where Nunes was a little bit more relaxed. She was throwing from the outside, a little bit more free flowing. So Nunes, I think Nunes had the advantage on the feet. And then when she took her down, it was until that last round, I think Shevchenko gave her a nice elbow, which kind of got top position and dominated from there. But Nunes was able to get up. But it was her conditioning ultimately at the end.
Yeah, I like Nunes in this fight, personally.
You think she can hang the five rounds?
That's
the question. But do I think she can win three of five rounds if it goes five rounds?
Yes.
I think she can. But I, at the same time... Let's talk about how dangerous Shevchenko is.
Unreal.
Yeah, she's unbelievable.
And if
Shevchenko ends up losing this fight, I feel bad for whoever wins this next season of Tough to crown the flyweight champion. Because, I mean, no disrespect to Roxanne Modafferi, she's a great fighter, but she's considered the number one seed on that card. I don't know how she'd do against Shevchenko.
She's come a long way. I've actually trained with her in Japan as well, and at the time her striking was not good at all. And I mean they've obviously highlighted that quite a bit. She's improved her striking a lot. But
did you watch the first episode?
I watched bits and pieces of the fights or the fight I should say. I kind of stopped paying attention honestly after a while to the Ultimate Fighter. I just kind of
seems to be the consensus.
I'm with you.
I watch it every week, but whatever.
Yeah, well, you're an encyclopedia.
I like watching it. I think it's a good show. Yeah. And I'm a fan of Modafferi. I think I'd like to get her on the show actually because I find that she's a very interesting person outside of the cage.
I don't really know much about her, but yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely interesting. I'll say that. Like I said, in Japan, she's what you'd call very nerdy, and she's very fascinating.
That's what I like.
Too. Now, exactly, me too. I'm a nerd at heart, honestly.
You didn't dress up as a Power Ranger in any way, and
No. She's definitely, but she takes it to another level. That's for sure. But she's fun and entertaining. She's herself, and I think that's something that I think people can look at and jump on board with her because she is herself. That's her. You know, whether she's in the cage or not, that's the way she is. And I certainly hope she gets a contract to stay in the UFC because she does deserve it. She's been around so long.
And she's already gotten a win on the show.
Yes.
No, spoiler alert if you haven't watched the first episode.
No, I have not.
You don't need to.
Maybe I'll go, back.
You should watch it. It's actually, it highlighted Modafferi really well in that first episode.
All right.
And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit as the weeks go on and try to get some of the contestants on the show. let's go to the next fight, Magny versus Dos Anjos. This is a fight I love. I think this is going to be a really interesting fight. Magny, extremely long. He's probably the longest guy outside of John Jones in the non-heavyweight weight classes in the UFC, going against Dos Anjos, who's moved up to 170. Do you have a gauge on this one, Joe?
I think it's just an interesting fight in general. I think it's just, as a fan, I'm excited for this fight. Magny's been doing well. Like, you know, looking at some of his recent wins, he's just beat Johnny Hendricks, which is huge. He has a win over Hector Lombard, Gaslam. So I think he's ready to take on the big names. And Dos Anjos hasn't been winning those big fights as much. He does have a win against Saferdin, which is a tough win. But I don't know. Is it the same Dos Anjos that we saw as a lightweight champion?
I think, yeah, it's interesting that obviously the weight cut was probably an issue to begin with. I mean, now it's a question of what attributes is he going to bring to the table that are going to be, you know, going to work for him as a welterweight. I mean, people always talk about changing weight classes, but maybe you change weight classes, those attributes that you have as a lightweight might not transfer so well as a welterweight. Do you know what I mean? So I'm curious to see how this is going to work for him. It is one of those interesting fights for sure. I don't know how it's going to transfer over. I think Magny's like just on a roll, right? And he's going to do really well in this fight. I tend to lean towards him.
That's a great point that you bring up. And the reason I say that is you look at Cerrone at 170 and Masvidal at 170, and those skill sets translate a lot better to 170 than kind of the grinding style that Dos Anjos has, the in-tight striking that he has. And then, of course, you look at Johnny Hendricks moving up to 185, and all of his strengths at 170 are kind of offset at 185. So, as you mentioned, moving up in weight class can help you or it can hinder you. And, you know, one guy I always bring up that I keep saying should move back up is Antonio Carlos Jr., who's, I think he's fighting in Sao Paulo next month. He is a guy that won the Ultimate Fighter at heavyweight in Brazil, and he fights at middleweight now. But if you took him at heavyweight and you took his Brazilian jiu-jitsu wizardry, there aren't a lot of guys that can handle that at heavyweight. And the guys are easier to take down at heavyweight because they're bigger, they're more clumsy. He would weigh at probably around 220 at heavyweight, and I think he would just have a way bigger advantage there against the faster and more slippery guys that he fights at middleweight.
That's where it works in reverse now, right? Like, a lot of guys who are smaller prefer the heavyweights.
You should move up.
Especially with kickboxing, because those who, like, you know, I could struggle to make light heavyweight, but I can stay, be the faster guy, can be in and out. Like, we're going to see a good example is Gouken Saki, who we're going to see make one of the best kickboxers of all time, making his UFC debut at a fight night in Japan. And Saki is that fighter. He was always at lighter heavyweight, but he took advantage of his speed, his power. If you go online and watch some of his kickboxing, and he fought on the same card as I did at we were at Glory 6 Japan in Istanbul. Huge. It was all there for Saki. And Saki fought Daniel Gita, again, one of the biggest heavyweights in kickboxing. He was so small, but he came in and he won with like a 16-punch combination because he's just so fast, so aggressive, being able to put combinations together. So I think a lot of these guys will have trouble at light heavyweight and dominate in the heavyweight division.
And you
see
Gastelum also. Gastelum moving up to 185. He's way faster at 185, way quicker, and he gets his strikes off so much faster. Obviously, he lost to Weidman, but I think Weidman's a world-class guy.
But he has Anderson Silva next.
Yeah, he's got Anderson Silva next. That's going to be an interesting in mainland China.
Oh,
that's the main event. I'm really looking forward to that one. That's going to be a very interesting fight.
Oh, for sure.
Because the length of Anderson. Yeah. Anderson being able to keep Gastelum far away is going to be the obvious strategy for him. But if Gastelum gets in tight with those crisp shots, Anderson's got some trouble.
Yeah, that's a tough fight. I don't know. I'm still waiting for Gastelum to, stock up in my eyes.
Right. Well, let's look at the rest of 215. Just take a look at the Canadians on the card. We've got Sarah Morris against Ashley Evans-Smith. Gavin Tucker versus Rick Glenn. Mish Clark, a friend of yours, against Alex White. Luis Henrique versus Arjun Buller. And Cajun Johnson versus Adriano Martins. When I look at these fights, I think the guys that have the really clear advantage would be Gavin Tucker and Arjun Buller. I think that Morris and Ashley Evans-Smith is a pretty even matchup. Clark versus White is an even matchup. The thing about Clark is, if you look at his last two losses, who they're against, the level of competition he's fought, as opposed to Alex White, is way higher. So, you know, I think as long as Clark can stay in that fight for three rounds, he should be able to win. Cajun Johnson, that's a tough tall order for him to fight Adriano Martins. Adriano Martins is one of the tougher guys in that division, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm excited after talking to we can't really say Gavin Tucker, but Gavin Tucker is I'm excited to see him.
We can say that we've already spoken to Gavin Tucker, who we're going to talk to later on
the
show.
Gavin.
We may as well use our knowledge. Yeah, you know, we interviewed him at a different time than us recording the show.
Yeah, but he's an encyclopedia. He knows. He studies the game. He's one of those guys like Antonio and myself who are martial artists, students of the game. And he knows his technical, his footwork. He's just exciting to watch. He's a showman. So he's the one I'm really pumped to see what he can do.
Anybody on your radar, Antonio, for this card?
Yeah, for sure. Any of the Canadians I'm going to try to side with no matter what. I mean, I've been on the same card as Mitch Clark. He's a great guy, great fighter. I know he's coming off of an injury and he's sort of, you know, trying to get back to where he used to be, and I'm certainly hoping he's going to go out and show his skills again, where he can, you know, come on top. And so I'm certainly pulling for him to win, and I think he's got a good shot. Actually, it's a good matchup against Alex White. I think it's a good matchup.
I agree with
him.
You.
So I think his skill set matches up quite well. Gavin Tucker, again, he's one of those. I'm a featherweight, so obviously I pay attention to the featherweights, and he's an undefeated young prospect who's in there. He had a great showing his first time out. Showed a lot of different skills.
Yeah, against Sam Cecilia, too.
Yeah, it was a very, very tough opponent, mm-hmm. and he got to showcase a lot of different skills, especially in his stand-up. His striking is looked really crisp. I think with Rick Glenn's a very, very tough fighter.
Mm-hmm. Champion, yeah, World Series of Fighting.
This is going to be interesting. This is definitely his biggest test.
And you mentioned you were supposed to fight Rick Glenn at one point.
There was, when I actually signed with World. So, I mean, I was well aware of his skill set and what he brings to the table. And I see him fight before as well. He fought on the Score Fighting Series, you know, when they used to have well. So I got to actually watch him live, and he's a very dangerous fighter, brings a lot of skills as well, and is just tough, tough, tough. But I'm hoping Gavin pulls it off. I think he's going to be very crafty in there, and he's going to figure out a way to sort of go around his Rick Glenn's strengths and come away with the win. I'm certainly hoping that's how it goes down.
Yeah, we're talking to Arjun Buller later on in the show. His resume is unbelievable. For a heavyweight, first of all, I think he's probably the most decorated, behind Daniel Cormier, the most decorated heavyweight in terms of wrestling to be in the UFC. Was Randy Couture an Olympian?
Yes.
He was. Okay.
Yeah. Greco-Roman
so,
wrestling.
So maybe
yeah.
along with Randy Couture, because, you know, Buller was an Olympian.
And so was Dan Henderson. He was there too.
Oh, I'm talking about just at heavyweight.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So,
if you're looking just
at heavyweight, you've got
DC.
Yeah, you've got DC and Couture, and I think that might be it that has that kind of a resume. And I think that
Dan's fought a heavyweight too. No, I'm just
I guess he has
at some point, right?
Yeah, he fought Fedor. He fought Fedor. He was 209 pounds. Okay, I'll give it to you. Antonio's got me. Yeah, you can have that one. Okay,
beat the encyclopedia.
Yeah, exactly. Although it wasn't in the UFC, it was in Strikeforce, which is now owned by the UFC. Technically, it's part of the fight library. Okay, I'll give it to you. But I think that that Buller bringing that kind of skill set into the UFC, especially right now when heavyweight's pretty wide open. I think that, you know, all it takes is two or three good wins, and you can get up to the top of that division fairly quickly.
Has he been in, like I said, I haven't seen him fight, but I've heard his name, and I've been following through reading and articles. But how is he durable-wise? Can he fight back? Can he take damage himself? Because that's a big thing, right? If you can dish it out is one thing, but a lot of guys, you have to be able to take it. And especially in that heavyweight division, you get him against a heavy hitter, who knows?
Well, I think he's gone the distance in a few of his fights. That doesn't really mean anything. It depends what his level of competition is. And I think we'll see that against Uri Enrique.
He looks tough.
Enrique is a pretty tough guy. He was winning that fight against Martin Tybura early on, I thought. And then Tybura turned the tides. That was a close fight. That's going to be a really interesting debut. That's one to watch. That's going to be on Fight Pass. In terms of the fights we have on TSN, Sarah McMahon versus Ketlin Vieira, Henry Cejudo versus Wilson Hayes, Sarah Morris versus Ashley Evans-Smith, and the aforementioned Gavin Tucker against Rick Glenn. Two things to watch. If there's any issues with weight cutting with both Nunes or with Borg, you do have Cejudo and Hayes on the card, as well as McMahon and Vieira. And I think McMahon's right there in the title mix at women's bantamweight. I believe she's won five in a row or somewhere in that area code. And she's really been looking good in her recent fights. So So if she gets a win, she's going to be right in the mix for a shot at that bantamweight title. Especially with a lot of the bantamweights, I think, are going to migrate to 125 once that division opens up.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen enough of Sarah recently, but yeah, I'm excited. I heard she's been doing well. I've been following her career from a long time, so we'll see what she's got.
And that'll be the main event of the prelims on TSN, Sarah McMahon versus Ketlin Vieira. So let's get to our guest, Gavin Tucker, featherweight in the UFC, a Canadian big up-and-comer. His footwork's been compared to Dominic Cruz. We'll ask him a little bit about that during our interview right here with Gavin Tucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Pleased now to be joined by one of the top Canadian prospects in the UFC, Gavin Tucker, who will be fighting Rick Glenn, the former World Series of Fighting featherweight champion, at UFC 215 in Edmonton. Gavin, it's your first time fighting in Canada outside of the East Coast, the West Coast of Canada. You still haven't left the boundaries of this country, but now you're going to be on the West Coast of the country. Are you excited?
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's all the same to me. It's still the same same cage, same fight, same lights, same crowd. Everything is going to be is going to look the same from my end. So, hopefully it's the same kind of night too.
Yeah, we're looking at your record, and since you fought one of my friends, Lyndon Whitlock, you mm-hmm. kind of seemed like you weren't as active, and then all of a sudden you came out like maybe one fight a year, and then you came out with a big bang at UFC.
Yeah, I had some trouble getting fights for a little while, and I went through a couple surgeries, a shoulder surgery being kind of the most severe of the two, and that kind of set me back for a little while, put me out for maybe a year and a half, maybe even 2 years. And in my return, fought locally here in Halifax and had a successful fight and kind of just built my way into it. And luckily, the UFC came through Halifax, and here we are heading to Edmonton.
Successful might be an understatement. You won in the first 37 seconds of the fight, which is very impressive. Your footwork is really, really unique. It does have shades of Dominic Cruz, Frankie Edgar. Who did you watch that you kind of try to emulate, or is it kind of your own style?
Hmm. No, when people have brought that up quite a bit since, and I mean, I come from here in Halifax, where our gym is, we've got a really rich boxing history here, and when we're looking at footwork, I don't really watch MMA fighters for it. I have no disrespect to those guys. I think they're really fantastic, but I watch a lot of old-school Marvin Hagler fights. Hagler is a good southpaw. He's switched a lot. You can see it in a lot of his, especially his later fights in his career and stuff like that. Hagler has been a huge influence on me. Pernell Whitaker, Sweet Pea. I mean, it doesn't get any more beautiful than that kind of footwork. And if MMA fighters are listening and you don't know who Pernell Whitaker is, definitely hit up YouTube. And a lot of the old school karate, man, honestly, too, like the karate footwork and karate angles and a lot of like traditional Holland style kickboxing. It drew from a lot of different places, but in the end, you have to go with what works best for you. I'm naturally right-handed. I throw a ball right hand, but I write with my left hand. So a lot of the different techniques and stuff I employ is what kind of feels natural for my body to do. I've always been a shorter guy, so dealing with taller guys and having to, arc my punches over and then cut angles really sharply and switch stances is something that just kind of happened organically for me through a lot of boxing rounds and then kind of found its way into my MMA sparring.
Yeah, because I find a lot of guys, especially as a kickboxer and seeing it in MMA, their distance control is so off. You know, they don't understand mm-hmm. how to control that distance, but you do it really well, and this is why, you know, in your fight with Cecilia, you barely got hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, distance control and understanding range is definitely a big thing, especially if you want to kick. Because I see a lot of guys in MMA kick in when they're too close or kick in when they're
too far back,
yeah. Getting countered. Yeah, and that's a big thing, you know. And a lot of people right now don't kind of embrace that boxing range, that mid-range. They're all the way in on the clinching and the wrestling, or they're all the way out firing these kicks, you know. And so for me, I'm trying to embrace every range and know when to kind of use each range. The boxing is definitely the biggest one because it's going to come in flashes as far as MMA is concerned. The last fight, I stood southpaw most of the fight. I'm fighting the right-handed guy, so we had a very open stance, left a lot of room for my kicks. This fight is southpaw on southpaw. And he's a 6 foot southpaw with a reach that's over 70 inches. So it's going to be a different type of tactic employed, a different type of range. And it's going to be, hopefully the same outcome, but a much different looking approach to the win.
What made you decide to go into MMA? Someone who's so well versed in the footwork of boxing from a place that really loves boxing. How did you make that your jump?
I was here in the city, so I was a musician before, and I was studying jazz in university. I would come to the city to do gigs and play in dinner theaters, whatever work was really available, and I started off at a boxing club that housed Titans. So Titans was like under the roof of Palooka's boxing club. So it's primarily a boxing club, so we had a heavily influenced MMA program. The MMA program was heavily influenced by boxing, and the guy who ran it was a jiu-jitsu black belt under Henzo. So boxing and jiu-jitsu kind of just came at me all at once. I never really questioned it, and I boxed with the boxers. I rolled with the jiu-jitsu guys. I wrestled with the wrestlers. We didn't have any concept of weight classes. Of course, I'm green. I'm still cutting my teeth. I still have under 15 fights, you know, so I'm still not questioning too much and just kind of embracing this. And, you know, when Sean Shelby calls me with a fight, I don't say yes or no to it. It's just, okay, this is a fight, and prepare that way. And I really don't decide on anything when it comes to this combat stuff. I just kind of let it happen, and this is where it's kind of organically led.
And you went through like a struggle to get where you are now. I know at one point you're even selling guitars for training, right?
Yeah, they all went, you know, and but it's all worth it. I'm kind of, I'm not complaining too much about that. They went for good reason, and they made space for something else to come in. So I'm really pleased with how everything happened.
Now, we recently talked to Elias Theodore, and he said you're changing up camps a little bit every so often, coming down to TriStar as well.
Yeah, I spent some time at TriStar. The good thing about the last fight, obviously the outcome was a good thing, but also the financial gain that I got, you know, it changed my life. And I literally reinvested every cent back into my training. I'm headed up and waiting for the fight week per diem to come through right now so I can make it to this fight. I've reinvested every single cent. I hired the national wrestling coach here. I've been to TriStar twice. I took a trip to Thailand for a month. You know, I got pad work and privates with Conrad at TriStar, Kurash, spent some time with Faraz, a lot of time in Thailand, sparring with everyone from Lurdzilla up to guys who are current Raja Stadium champions for clinch. And, no, I think I invested my money really well. It's always hard being a martial artist and wanting to put it back into yourself because life is happening around you, but you really want to get into this and really get closer to yourself and closer to martial arts, it's where it has to go. So I'm still making those sacrifices. I'm still selling those guitars, so to speak, and I intend on going and collecting the benefit from it here in a week and change.
So I won't say if you're successful. I'll say when you're successful, because in your mind, if isn't really a question, I'd imagine, at this point. So when you're successful at UFC 215, are you looking for a quicker turnaround and hoping to fight in Winnipeg at the end of the year?
No, I have no set plans. I really like the space between fights. You know, it's a good opportunity to grow. Like I said, every fight that comes up, you know, there's pressure for fighters. You do it now, you do it now, or whatever. But for me, like I said, I'm still under 15 fights, and I'm very aware of what experience means to a fighter. And sometimes you have to get that in the gym. I'm already here in the USC, so I don't get to gain that knowledge through fights and fighting locally anymore. I had to get it through putting myself in uncomfortable situations and traveling and getting these savage rounds in. So that's what I'm going to be doing after the fight. A similar amount of time would be ideal for me, a quicker turnaround if I feel it. But again, I'm going to play it all by ear. If it feels right, I'm going to do it. If it doesn't feel right, no one's pressuring me into it. I'm here to be the best version of myself. And, you know, and I feel like in my mindset right now, I've been a champion since I've been a little boy. And so I'm going to go out there and just continue the same things that I've been doing that have gotten me to this point.
What's your take on Rick Glenn?
Yeah, so Rick Glenn's a very different type of fight. You know, you don't see too many six-foot southpaws at 145. He's definitely durable. He's got a good chin. He's taking some big shots. The guys he's been hit by aren't exactly giant punchers, giant strikers. He cuts off the cage really well. He hides the center dot pretty well. He cuts off the cage in both directions decently, one direction specifically well. And he leads off the left side a lot. So I'm expecting him to come forward. If he's getting out boxed and he's getting out struck, he's probably going to push forward and look for that clinch and try to pin me against the cage, similar to what we saw in the last fight with Nover. But he's only got a few positions that he really goes to, and each of those positions is addressed really well. So I'm expecting that if it turns into a grappling exchange, he's going to be out grappled. If he stands in front of me and boxes me, you know, he better hope I slip on a banana peel, because I'm just winning.
So one thing I wanted to touch on was your musical background, just going back to that. I occasionally watch MMA while listening to jazz. I find that the jazz in particular flows really well with MMA. And given that you have a good background in jazz and guitar, do you find that a lot of the creativity that you were able to utilize from jazz, I don't know if you were what kind of jazz you were into, whether it was free jazz or more orchestral jazz, do you find that you're able to take some of the creativity from your music background and put it into your fights?
Yeah, no, improv, blues, and jazz, I like a lot. I don't think specifically there's certain things that definitely translate over, like the time you put in, the diligence, the practice time, and really listening. One of my jazz professors had a really good quote. He said, how are you going to play jazz if you don't listen to jazz? And I think that's really important for fights. How are you going to kickbox and not go back to Glory World Series and watch, Bazooka Joe kickboxing fights? How are you not going to go back and watch guys in your weight class? You have to, and pay attention. Not watch the fight, but watch the fight. Look at every exchange. Look at every counter, how each guy counters, how he counters a low kick, how he counters a high kick, where he twitches. You make a feint at him, you feint a jab, what's his reaction? You know what I mean? Everything about that. So as far as the jazz application is concerned, definitely being creative and go into it, because if you stop and try and play over a chord and the chord's gone, your opportunity is gone as well. So you can't be too stuck into one thing if it's not working, and that's why plan A, B, C, D all in place. You don't have one counter to the left high kick. And Glenn's got a very powerful left high kick, since we're being specific, so I can't have one counter to that left high kick. I'm going to have a set counter, of course, to everything that I've seen him throw in every fight that was available to me. But those counters are not always going to work, and guys make adjustments. So I need to make adjustments based on his adjustments as well. And, in saying that, at the end of the day, these are the things. You flip a coin, and I'm sure he's in the same mindset, working hard and intending to win the fight as well. But he's going to have to be something very special to come and take this from me. The amount of study time I put into this guy, I feel like I know him as well as his close relatives too at this point. Things that he's going to do, tendencies and stuff like that. And the Zebras don't change their stripes too often, especially if you're seeing the same thing over 5 years of fighting, So we'll see.
I'm actually curious what some of your favorite jazz albums are. I'd love to listen to them while I watch some tape of you, because I think that might translate.
Yeah, sure. I mean, some of my favorite vocal jazz, Chet Baker. Chet Baker sings. It's probably one of my favorite albums of all time. Sat down and transcribed some of those trumpet parts. And, of course, that voice, that burned-out voice where he's just high as a kite and can barely get the words out. I really kind of, find connection in that he's literally struggling. And I think there's some recordings where he's so burnt out, he's like laid on his back, and they just put a microphone in front of him and let him sing over the tracks. And those kind of albums I really like. Chet Baker sings a huge one. Most of the Miles Davis stuff before he got into the jazz fusion stuff, Kind of Blue being, I think it's like the best-selling jazz album of all time, but so it seems like kind of cliche or typical to say, but it's a good reason that's one of the best albums. Bill Evans on piano, anything Bill Evans touches is gold. As far as piano kind of jazz, Chicoria, Bill Evans, some of my favorite, and a lot of the Canadian scene, Ed Dickert, who I think he teaches at one of the colleges here in Canada right now, but he is an amazing, Lauren Lofsky, Ed Dickert as well, but Lauren Lofsky is a Canadian guy as far as I know, and Yeah, he's really incredible. So for the guitar stuff, that kind of feel, and Ralph Towner, if you get a chance, Nylon String, so it's got that soft feel. Ralph Towner is one of my favorite guys. But I honestly don't listen to much jazz anymore. I listen to a lot more country music and stuff that I kind of grew up on lately. I've gotten away from that quite a bit, and obviously more invested, because if you're invested in that, or it takes up a lot of your time, just as this one does. So I need something a little more mindless, for lack of a better term.
Before I start geeking out on jazz talk, we unfortunately have to wrap. But thanks, Gavin. We really appreciate it. It was great getting a real sense of you and your background and what you're all about. And best of luck at UFC 215 in Edmonton. Hopefully the West Coast is as fruitful for you as the East Coast has been of Canada.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you for your time.
Gavin Tucker, impressive young man. I love hearing him talk about his love of jazz music and being a jazz music performer.
Well, see, I love his detail to the sport. So, I mean, the fact that he's so technical and he's wanting to continually improve and being a student of the game, that's what I appreciate.
Yeah, so as someone who loves music and MMA, he gets my heart from that. And he's one to your heart.
For a striking
from his
skill.
Striking acumen, yeah. And his technical research.
He's got my heart there.
Yeah, and being a Joe V fan also helps.
That's it, yeah. Hopefully he comes and we keep in touch and get some training in one day. It would be awesome.
That'd be fun. And as you mentioned, Antonio, this is a guy who you think has a pretty bright future in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. We had discussed earlier where there was, you know, no featherweights for the longest time, and now we're just getting all this quality in there. It makes me happy. It makes me happy to see that you know, the sport is still growing, and we're seeing this new batch of guys that are coming out. Just, you know, they're doing stuff that I could never do at that point. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it's on another level. The sport just keeps growing, and it makes me happy to see these young guys coming out and just doing things that I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So,
I'd ask you off air if you were retired. Do you have a comment on that?
I won't say I'm retired or not, but I don't know. I you know what? I'll continue to do martial arts. I'll continue to be involved in the sport. I'll continue to help train the young guys. Hopefully I can bring a lot of my experience to the table and create those new batch of killers from Canada. That's my goal at some point. I mean, it's, you know, what else do I do with all the knowledge, mm-hmm. right? Just pass it on. Hopefully they take it and run with it and do great things with it.
Are there any guys at your gym coming up?
Yeah, right now they're mostly fighting in TKO, which is a huge show in Canada. And so I have Derek Falk, who we call Manchild, I think has a bright future if he chooses to pursue the sport. You know, he's just one of those young kids who's just a sponge, right? So
Lindsay's looking tough.
Yeah, Lindsay Garbutt, man, just amazing person.
She's the King of the Cage champion, right? Or am I thinking of somebody different?
Somebody different. She's actually a two-time box, two-division champion, I think, in boxing.
She's someone to look out for in women's MMA.
You know, she's just got everything going. Personality, she's got the style, she could strike, her ground game's always getting better, her wrestling's always getting better. I'm always excited I'm excited because I get to help her train every once in a while, too. That's that, you know, and I get to see the improvements, and she's just fun to watch, period. And those are the main two from out of Bruckman Martial Arts at the moment that are active. And there's other people around the area that I'm always, you know, watching and paying attention to. But from my group, those are the two.
Cool. We were talking about featherweight. I think it's the best division in the UFC. I think it's the toughest division and the deepest division. If you look at guys that aren't ranked, there's a plethora of talent. It's crazy how deep that division is.
I have to agree.
A lot of people say it's lightweight. And I think lightweight does have a lot of killers.
It's close. It's definitely close. I think those would easily the top two.
I made a crazy list. I'm gonna pull it up now of the fighters at featherweight. Just a few of them that I think are really, really exciting, because we saw Zabit Magomed Sharipov this past weekend, and he's another guy that I think is the miss. You got Duho Choi, Yair Rodriguez, Zabit, Holloway, obviously, Korean Zombie, Lamas, Edgar, Jason Knight is coming up, Ortega's coming up, Charles Oliveira, if he stays at, we don't know if he's going to be at featherweight or lightweight. He looked good at lightweight against Will Brooks, but he could be going back to featherweight. Mm-hmm. He had told me when he last fought that he was thinking about
it. Big.
Has trouble cutting the weight,
He's big.
Cub Swanson, Elkins, Gavin Tucker, who we just had on, Jose Aldo, obviously, Mirsad Bektik, Moicano looks good. Ryan Hall is an interesting character, and Shane Burgos is another guy. And then there's also Kennedy.
Another Canadian. I got to talk about him for sure.
So, and he's an undefeated guy who's looked great in the UFC. So
absolutely,
that division is just stacked.
Yeah, I agree.
It's stacked. I'm excited about it.
I'm biased, so of course they're the best.
It could be the most stacked division, but what's the most exciting division to you guys?
I think it's featherweight. I'm like, look.
You're
at
gonna go
list.
Exciting as well.
Think of the potential matchups. Like, think of Duho Choi versus Yair Rodriguez.
Are you just saying this because Antonio's here now?
No, come on. I tweeted it over the weekend.
Okay, fair.
Like, I don't have a time machine.
I don't know. The most exciting to me, I would probably, I like, again, me being biased, but I would like a welterweight middleweight. You got speed, you got knockouts, you got power. Featherweight.
Dude,
look
at the championship fights that the welterweight.
I'm not saying it's as stacked. It's not as stacked, but I mean,
I'm talking about excitement. You're talking about welterweight. You were just talking about how boring Woodley is earlier in the show.
Yeah, that's Woodley.
Yeah, but I mean,
have you seen Joe Valtellini fight?
Well, not in the UFC.
There you go.
Are you alluding to something?
No, if I did, well,
your fight against
power knockouts. So I like those light heavyweights, the middleweights. I appreciate knockout.
But
power.
There's a lot of finish. There's a lot of finishers in featherweight too.
They have been, they have been.
You are getting a lot of the 155ers that are migrating down to 45 as well. So you're starting to seeing, like, that's the beauty of that division, is that you are seeing a lot of the names
they're
mentioned.
Saying Michael Johnson might be moving down.
Yeah, see, like, you're gonna get a lot of these guys that are kind of teetering at that weight. They're like, I think I'm gonna go down. I think I can make 45 and feel comfortable.
Do you agree with the new weight classes they were talking about? They were talking about like a 165.
Yeah, getting rid of 170, doing 165, 175.
Kind of going like 10 pounds
by 10 pounds,
each.
More like a boxing.
Then,
boxing,
then maybe doing a 225 also.
That would be, you know what? I don't know. I think it would just get confusing.
I'm all for catch weights. I'm all for super fight catch weights. That's what I think Demetrius Johnson should do next. Like, let's get more super fights.
I like that
fights.
Idea. What,
why
yeah.
not? Let
why
two
change,
guys agree on a
division?
Weight.
Yeah, let them agree
if it's
on a
not
weight.
A title fight, let two guys make the weight. That's going to be healthier, and that's going to allow
we
them to perform
Burrell
better.
We saw Sterling recently at 140.
Yeah, just agree to it. Hey, 160. Let's go 165.
I agree.
We're both going to do it and perform
as long as
better.
You make the weight, if you get a title shot, then you're good. Right? Why do you need to make...
On the title shot, yes, make your weight. But in other fights, why not? It's going to help with some extra weight-cutting issues. If two big guys,
but
let them have an
extra 5 pounds.
But the problem
is, if you say every fight's a catchweight fight, then nobody's going to know what division these guys are trying to win a title in.
I think it's important to just pick and choose who they're... obviously, you know, money does talk at the end of the day. It's still entertainment. You know, company still needs to make money, so for sure. I think it's funny because, I mean, I can go back to Japan. Japan, as much as they had, they were criticized for their freak show fights. A lot of those freak show fights were to get everybody to come in and watch it so
Absolutely.
That they were paying. And then they had the real fights, you know. But it was important to distinguish the two. Important to distinguish this is still this is an anomaly. People are going to watch this. But you know what? These two guys are fighting in the main event. These are the two legit guys. Yeah. These are ranking-changing fights. This is the world champion versus the next best guy. I think that's the most – I'm okay with the UFC doing kind of these – I'm not going to call them freak shows. I don't want to use that word per se, but –
Money fights.
Why not? Yeah. And seriously, I mean, I would like to see, you know.
Use DJ. You have to
Absolutely.
Look at it.
Sure.
Like, for me to get
champion.
Him
DJ
pound
doesn't
for wanna, pound.
DJ doesn't want to do them.
Why? Did he come out?
He didn't want to fight Dillashaw. Dillashaw was going to go down to 125.
Well, he wants, I know he's come out publicly saying, I want $1 million payday. To get $1 million payday, you're going to need a super fight.
Yeah, and this card, unfortunately, doesn't look like it's being pumped up much.
No.
They don't pump the flyweights in general, though. I think.
Yeah, but why headline a pay-per-view with them then?
No, you're right. I just don't see as much about them. I think
I can't understand why people don't like watching Demetrius Johnson.
Well, North America in general is a big man's world. Like anything that's bigger is usually going to be the main event. Anytime there's a heavyweight championship fight and there's a middleweight championship fight, you're normally going to get the heavyweights fighting, at the end of the card. That's just the way it is. That's the nature
of the
beast, right?
It's always been like that, yeah.
Why do you think Demetrius isn't a draw? Like, why do you think people don't gravitate to his fights? If he's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport.
It's funny, because he has a huge following. I mean, he does other things outside of the UFC. I mean, I think he's still sponsored by Xbox or something, and he plays video games. And
it's on Twitch.
Twitch, everyone's
and,
playing
you
that.
You know, he's got that side, too. I don't know. I don't know. I guess we're in that Conor McGregor era where people want to see that style of promotion.
They want to see something outside of the cage.
Yeah,
the question is, who is marketable now, like in the UFC?
That's the question. Who's the big superstar outside of Conor?
Right. And how do you become a superstar? I think that's the more important question. That's the question I think fighters don't ask themselves.
Right time,
a lot.
Right place sometimes?
Yeah. I think Chael Sonnen puts it best. It's not how you talk or how you fight. It's how you make people feel.
How you connect with the audience.
How you connect with the audience.
I agree.
How people resonate. How you resonate with people. Because Conor resonated with people because he was so unique. He was calling guys out. He was wearing the suits. He was
Floyd
brash.
Mayweather, like, he's, not the most exciting fighter to watch, but you wanted to watch him to see him win or lose, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Conor is certainly unique in a sense that, he was able to actually get people, obviously you're going to see where I was siding on this fight, to start. He actually got people to believe that he was actually going to outbox the master boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And people bought it. They actually thought Conor had it. He's going to come in. He's going to do something so unique, no one's ever seen in boxing. And I used to sit in the corner and laugh.
Yeah,
I'm sure you were doing the same thing, Joe. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at it going, come on, people. Like,
I was in the same boat.
Right? Yeah. I appreciate what Conor brings to the table from an MMA perspective. He utilizes all his different tools very well to implement his game. And MMA allows him to do that. Boxing, you're obviously simplifying it, and let's be honest, like there's nothing that Mayweather hasn't seen in boxing.
Exactly.
We're still a bit high on this fight, but when you look at it in hindsight, don't you think people are going to look at Floyd's 50-0 and be like, he beat an 0-1 guy
That was
break
my
the
concern
record?
Before the
yes,
fight even
absolutely.
Started.
For sure.
But that being said, people will know who Conor McGregor is. You'd have to almost pretend that MMA doesn't exist if you're going to say that.
Well, Conor got more praise than anything just for lasting 10 rounds, which in my opinion was honestly what I saw versus what everyone else was saying. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe Joe's the same. It's funny. We haven't actually had a chance to discuss this yet. Yeah. But what I saw was a veteran boxer who, to me, was pound for pound probably the best of his era, defensively at least, go in and just feel out Conor for a few rounds and then realize that, you know what, usually when Mayweather fights, you know, he's fighting the next best guy on the planet in whatever division he's fighting in, and he has all sorts of different looks on how he boxes, and, you know, from the Philly shell to using his pull counter, and he usually figures things out, and he changes his game plan brilliantly as he goes, and you watch him make every boxer almost look the same, as brilliant as they are. And I watched him with his hands up, walk towards McGregor, feel him out a little bit, and then I watched him take him apart. And then, in my opinion, he just needed to put on a show long enough for people to get their money's worth, and then decided, okay, it's time to put him.
Like, I still think if you put like a Triple G or a Canelo against, you know, Conor, doesn't go out three rounds.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
you're looking at an aggressive guy looking to come and power punch and finish, where, you know, Floyd took a different approach.
He's a tactician.
Yeah.
Well, there's even a local I don't want to call him kid. He's, you know, a little bit younger than me, named Brandon Bad Boy Cook from Ajax.
Brandon Cook's awesome.
He's undefeated, amazing boxer. He's a welterweight, if I'm not mistaken. I'd put him in against Conor in a boxing match and think he would beat him.
For sure.
Well, this is what I was saying about
an amateur. For my world title kickboxing match, I brought in amateur boxers. And these amateur boxers are incredible still. It's a different sport.
I was saying the crazy thing about it is Floyd against Berto was a 33-1 favorite. And when the fight closed, Floyd was a 3-1 favorite against Conor.
If you would have
taken Conor and put him against Andre Berto in a boxing match, there's no way the odds would have been lower than 3-1 for Berto, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
It's weird because even the way there's so many things. I'm sure you guys heard where there was a rumor going that Zab Judah put down Conor. Now Zab Judah being a southpaw, they kind of played it like, oh, he came out unorthodox, almost like a style that he didn't really understand, and he got dropped. And then Mayweather, you know, sent everyone out of the gym and was frustrated. And, you know, I think this all played with the odds. And let's be honest, I mean, if the real odds had come out and Conor had won, like, Vegas would have been bankrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why they maybe had to change the odds.
I spoke to the guy from the MGM, though, the day of, like, right before the fight. I spoke to the head of sportsbooks for the MGM.
That's the reason why they changed it.
Well, he said that they had no excessive liability. So if Conor would have won, they would have been okay. Because so much money came in on Floyd week of.
Okay, interesting. Okay. All right.
And that was just their books. That was just the MGM books.
Yes, okay.
Because somebody went to the Mirage and bet $1.2 million.
But if they kept those opening odds and Conor won, like, what were the opening odds?
The opening odds was around, it was 22-1 was the opener I saw.
So imagine that, right? So
These rich guys putting, you know, $1 million down on Conor. Yeah.
I just think that somehow they needed to play the odds. I think they both, you know, we're walking to the bank laughing at the end of the day because they walked away.
From a better, it was awesome. Like, you would bet a lot of money on Floyd because you were confident.
Yeah.
Or you bet money on Conor being like, hey, like, I can make a good payday off of this. I'll just put, you know,
They said the average bet for Floyd was $3,300. Actually, MGM said $4,000 was the average bet for Floyd, and the average bet for Conor was around $100.
Yeah. But still, you got a lot of people betting still on Conor.
Yeah. If you're going to bet, for sure.
I would have. It's for fun, yes.
I would have made an excessive bet on Floyd. I was trying to convince my wife too. She said
to sell the house and everything.
No, no, I said I want to bet $5,000 on Floyd to win, and she said no.
your key is not working.
That uppercut would have given me a heart attack though. Yeah. If I was watching that fight, that uppercut hits, just stop watching, leave.
That's hilarious.
Find a new place to live.
Yeah, basically.
And then reading the papers that Floyd won, come home. A couple thousand bucks up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring some gifts.
Be up about $1,500. Yeah. Not a bad weekend.
Not bad.
It's funny. Remember, I actually proposed this on my Facebook, was a match between, say, in K-1 style rules against you, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, and the consensus was very clear that you would decimate him. Like, there's no question.
People ask me, I would kill him. He would not have a chance. I say it now, I would beat Conor McGregor in one round in a kickboxing fight. You heard it first.
I would agree 100%.
Maybe he'll make it out of the first round. Maybe he makes it out of the first round in the second.
You
got to
say this when our podcast reaches a little bit higher. Yeah. Maybe you'll say it again.
I'll say it every day. I would beat him in a kickboxing
fight. Everyone was pretty clear. Leg kicks.
Yeah. He won't be able to defend them.
Gone, yeah.
He won't be able to handle my pressure, my low kicks.
No. I would beat him at Connect 4. I'll say that.
UFC trivia, you would destroy him.
your UFC
I don't know. I don't know what he knows. He's a student, too. He reads lots of books, Connor. He's a very bright guy.
You're up there, Aaron.
I think
you're not giving yourself enough credit.
I do with Connect Four, but not with trivia.
I like Connor, despite... It's funny, because when I people might think I'm being critical because I don't like him or I'm jealous in some way, shape, or form. No, I think the man's brilliant. I think anybody mm-hmm. who fights him comes away much better, yeah. regardless of
winner or
loss.
We're not talking about MMA here, either. We're talking about boxing.
Sure.
Like, you're not saying that he's going to step into an octagon against Tony Ferguson and get you know, his butt handed to him.
Right.
We're talking about him going into...
Which is amazing.
Everybody's got to give Connor credit.
It's amazing what he did. Yes.
Everybody's got to give Connor credit. He went into... I mean, listen.
100%.
This whole business venture was a success from top to bottom.
Absolutely.
I mean, you got to hand it to Connor. He was the perfect foil for Floyd. You got to hand it to Floyd for recognizing that and taking advantage of it. Everybody walked away a winner. And I was listening to the MMA Beat this week, and they said something that I thought was really interesting. Whatever your narrative was going into that fight, you had a way of justifying it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, if you said it was going to be a boxing clinic for Floyd and that he was going to pick him apart, you can say, listen, like what you're saying, Antonio, he baited him in, he toyed with him. If you said that Connor had a shot, you thought Connor was being... underrated going into this. You can make that case. Lasted 10 rounds with Floyd, hit that big uppercut.
Landed more punches than anyone else
in
the last, 10 opponents.
I saw a funny analogy about in regards to that fight with something like two superheroes in one movie, and it's kind of they both beat each other but walk away still, the heroes at the end of the day, and that's kind of how I looked at that fight.
Yeah.
They literally went in there and they both walked away very wealthy people, and I think Connor certainly did not lose his fans. Mayweather is 50-0, whether you want to agree with that or not, he still walks away. And
well, if anything, Connor's going to bring hopefully some boxing fans into MMA, which is what the sport needs as well.
Absolutely.
boxing fans are very, very stubborn people,
as are
MMA fans.
Yeah.
Although I watch boxing. I'm a big MMA fan. I watch some boxing.
Well, I think both groups should come watch Glory Kickboxing.
I'd agree with that. Opinion. I think Glory Kickboxing is one of the most exciting products on the planet.
Easily.
Today. It's so much fun to watch.
Easily. And I mean... Time after time, people are going to boo the jiu-jitsu. They don't understand it. You know, you're watching stand-up. People love it. But let's watch the best stand-up on the planet, and that's kickboxing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's funny because Joe and I always talk about this. In order for you to be the best at Glory, you have to strictly kickbox. Same in boxing. You got to box. MMA fighters, and this is just reality, we are, for the most part, most of us, are C to B class level at everything. You know, you might have to be. It's impossible. And even if you are, say, you could be a world champion kickboxer, to just make the transition, all that energy and time that you put into your craft as a kickboxer, you have to change that up and add wrestling.
And look at Holly Holm. Like, she just got her blue belt in jiu-jitsu recently.
You have to do that. So it's impossible to be the best at everything. And you know, if you're going to be the best at one particular discipline, whether it's kickboxing, boxing, even karate, judo, you have to focus on that. That's the only way, even jiu-jitsu, it's evolved so much. Like, I look at the jiu-jitsu of today, for example, the competition, and it's, I understand it, but I'm not doing what these guys are doing.
Yeah.
I'd be
the game changes all the time. Like, look at Donaher's team with all these leg locks.
Absolutely.
They've innovated the sport.
Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of that, the leg locks game itself were taken out just because of the way, for example, IBJJF sort of changed where they took out a lot of the more dangerous stuff. But when I started... Man, you can do twisting leg locks, spine locks, neck cranks. It was all legal.
Old is new.
It's new interesting. I watched that. Even within that 15-year time span, I watched it all come back full circle. And, I mean, I think the UFC did that for martial arts, period, when it came out in 1993. You know, we were used to watching, karate and kung fu movies, and all of a sudden, our perception of what a real fight looked like all of a sudden was...
shattered.
Taken away from us just because it's like, what is this? What is this guy doing? Taking guys to the ground, choking them with their gi. Like, what is this? Right? So it all came full circle. And it's coming full circle again. It was the grapplers winning, then the wrestlers, then, then you have a world-class kickboxer that knows some ground.
Strikers, like, I think. Now
right?
I think
Maury
the strikers
Smith came into the picture and all of a sudden everything just... Now
Mark Hunt, Alistair Overeem. And I mean, even if you look at particular techniques, like, for example, the low kick in my career, everyone's like, oh my God, this low kick. I was like, it's an old school weapon that made itself new again. Yeah. When Anderson Silva with the front kick, everyone's like, oh, the front kick's back in it. I was like, the front kick is one of the first strikes you learn in traditional martial arts from years ago. So, I mean, what's old is coming back as new, and things follow that full circle.
I think part of it is eventually, like, guys get so competent at everything that, they can find a way to throw the technique into mixed martial arts. But the only way you can do that, and again, it takes a long period of time, especially when I started. I mean, I used to do karate, boxing, kickboxing, different styles of karate.
Different,
you know,
stand-up arts.
Everything. But I made sure that I learned the discipline in its entirety, or tried to as much as possible, so that I can grasp certain techniques and bring it in. Because I think that's the only way. That's the only criticism I have for today's athletes, is that they look at it like, oh, it's MMA, I'm just going to learn how to do a round kick, I'm going to learn how to... No, I think you have to really dissect each and every one, and then sort of decide how you want to implement it into your game. And it took me years and years. Like, even when I came to Joe, for example, and my, you know, when I got signed with the UFC, Joe right off the bat said, I'm not going to take away what you do well. I'm just going to add this or add that. And he added a nice leg kick. He added some extra power to my hands. And, you know, it showed a little bit in my fights. And that was, again, was part of the evolution as well.
Well, I also think what you did better than others in MMA is everyone focuses on the art at itself. Like, they do stand-up, they do jiu-jitsu, they do wrestling. But MMA is the mixing of them all, and I feel that's what Antonio did best. He was able to mix his strike and his takedown better than everyone, and understanding those transitions, I feel, makes you a successful
athlete. And that was part of the sport's evolution, because right now all the best guys are guys that are learning and able to do everything.
You can do them all, but it's how you merge the two together.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's really been the cool part of the evolution of the sport. So now all these people that are getting into the sport are learning everything, and they're also learning promotion. Like, they're learning it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to learn, and a lot for people. People need to give credit to a lot of these athletes, and, you know, you do hear a lot of people call certain fighters cans and stuff like that. The amount of work these guys put in is astronomical. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy. But I still think, like you said, they need a little bit of coaching still and getting them better on the mic. I mean, you should have someone in the UFC doing like more of like talent development, brand development. Bring these guys in, sit them down and be like, okay, who do you want to fight next? I think if a fighter goes on post-fight interview and you're being asked, who do you want to fight next? I think you should have a list. You're not this person that's going to go there and be like, oh, I'm cocky, I'm arrogant, I'm going to call out everyone in the division. But you can do it in a classy way.
UFC wants me to fight next is a cop-out.
It's boring. That should not even be an answer, to be honest. Yeah. Like, this is your career. That person who says that knows who they want to fight.
Have a speech scripted. Have it ready to go.
That would probably be my answer. Yeah, I'll just fight.
But you know who you'd want.
Well, for sure.
You want to be a champion.
We should go back and watch.
You want to beat everyone ahead of you, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Say a few of those names.
Absolutely. I think,
you want to be a fighter that's going to fight everyone below you in rankings?
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
Right?
You mentioned something interesting to me. I don't know if I should share this on air, but you did say that...
Well, you're doing it anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to do it anyways. I can edit it out. No problem. Yeah. We're audio. We're not live. You had mentioned that... For Stephen Thompson, people were bringing in Raymond Daniels.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And they said, why don't they bring you in? Because you beat Raymond Daniels.
Yeah, so when everyone fights Wonder Boy Thompson, they bring in my old opponent, which is Raymond Daniels, one of the best point karate fighters in the world. Same as Wonder Boy. He's better than Wonder Boy. A lot better than Wonder Boy, in my opinion. Again, because he stays in kickboxing. He's fighting kickboxing. He's fighting for the Bellator kickboxing, you know, world title at September 23rd. So, I mean, he's active. So I would put him a better striker. So they bring him in. So they try to simulate how Wonder Boy Thompson's going to fight. But I absolutely destroyed Raymond Daniels with my style of pressure, my low kick system, all of those things Tyron Woodley could have done to finish the fight early, to, you know, get more exciting fights he didn't do because he
frankly,
was hesitant.
What Matt Brown did do against Wonder Boy.
Yeah, you have to put the pressure. You have to put pressure. You have to get in there. You have to slow his legs down. It takes a confident fighter, but I feel like if you would have given me Woodley for even a month, I could have made him a totally different fighter. I mean, big respect to you know, Duke Rufus, who knows his stuff, but I just don't think Woodley approached the fight the way he should have against that point karate style. So, yeah, if the people want to bring me in, I'm open to it.
Mm-hmm. But that makes sense. Why bring in a guy to emulate that style rather than someone who's beaten someone that...
Absolutely.
Well, that's the thing, bring makes in sense. Joe, because he's got the blueprint for it, right?
You
want the guy that has the
like
blueprint.
Like GSP. Him and GSP were hanging out when Rory McDonald was fighting him. That's when it came up. Rory was fighting, and then all of a sudden, I saw these pictures with Raymond Daniels. I'm like, you're not bringing a local Canadian fighter who's 4 hours away from you to beat that style? It just boggled my mind.
Yeah. You're like, you're trying to use someone... You're trying to use the code rather than use someone who's already cracked the code.
Exactly.
You're trying to figure out the code.
Yes, I mean, if I were to fight someone like that, I certainly would want to see the guy that, you know...
That can the style.
I want to see the style. How do you do it? And Joe certainly would have been the guy for sure.
Well, let's move on to our next guest. He's fighting this weekend at UFC 215 in Edmonton. He's a Commonwealth Games gold medalist. and Pan Am Games bronze medalist and an Olympian. Arjun Buller joins us on the TSN MMA show. Arjun, how are you today?
I am fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Watching some videos about you and reading about you, the thing that stands out to me is how big of a responsibility you take being a UFC athlete and an Olympian when it comes to the South Asian community and people that are learning how to become martial artists. Talk to me a little bit about that and the kind of the contributions you've done in your community.
You know what? It's something I was raised with, man. You don't forget who you are and where you come from. And more importantly, you don't forget the sacrifice that those before you, put out for you to have this opportunity. So I was raised with those values and principles and those stories of our family struggle, of our community struggle. But with that also came a lot of hard work on my end, the work ethic to get to where I'm at. But that's where I draw a lot of my inspiration from. You know, it's whenever you could be the first for something, it's always special. And it makes it that much easier for the next group of guys to punch their ticket through, you know?
Yeah, see, I, as a kickboxer, my coach was actually Sikh, Paul Minhas. I'm not sure if you know him. Yeah, okay. And he always told me stories about how strong the Sikh community is and how invested they are in martial arts.
For sure. We are a warrior people. If you look us up, look at our history, we come from northern India. Any invading army had to meet our people head on that wanted to come into India. You got Alexander the Great to the Mongols, to the Persian Empire, to the British. We were always there to meet them head on. So I come from that lineage, and I'm sure Paul told you stories for days for that stuff. But it's one of those things, man. If you look at Sikhs worldwide, we are a successful people, and we got that hot blood, man.
Would you be one of the first Sikh UFC fighters?
I would be the first Indian, the first Sikh, the first South Asian, whatever you want to call it. I am that guy. Yep.
That's amazing. That's going to be huge for you.
Also the first South Asian guest we've had on the show in our three episodes.
Okay.
So congratulations. Yeah, you can add that to the trophy case.
There we go. Aaron, we got to email him out a certificate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just keep checking the mail. I'm sure it'll arrive sometime soon. So you grew up on a farm pretty much, and you have, I guess, a farmhouse. I don't know what the name that you call it is, but your family has pretty much grown up wrestling in this farmhouse and learning the ropes from your father, who was a wrestler.
For sure. It's the sport of wrestling has so much history in our religion and culture. If you look back at the cave paintings in India, you got people wrestling. So it's been there forever. The founders of our religion, of the Sikh religion, wrestled and used that as a tool to actually keep the armies and the masses trained for battle and to keep them healthy. They push the sport of wrestling. So it's embedded with the psyche of our people. And when my family immigrated over, my grandfather came over first in 1959 and the rest of the family in 71. The sport of wrestling came with him. And my dad was the guy for our family. Everyone else worked and struggled to make ends meet. And while my dad competed and was a full-time athlete. So that's the story we come from. And, we've always had our own gym in our culture. We call it an akata. Japanese call it dojo. We've always had that on our family property. So we've got a full-size wrestling mat, gym, all that. And that's where we were all raised, man.
I saw a video. You couldn't have been more than 3 years old of you grabbing your dad by the head and throwing him. I thought that was pretty cool.
I took him for a ride, man. I had him. Yeah, that's my earliest memories are of my dad competing and training, me following him around in the gym, going to tournaments in India and around the world. So, it's like I said, it was a great environment to grow up in, and it's a lifestyle for me. This isn't something I just dreamt up. Hey, I want to be a fighter. Or I want to be a wrestler and represent my country. It's something that that I've been doing since the first time I took steps, man.
And now, when have you did you start making this transition, and how has the transition been? Like, I'm always dealing with athletes who are strikers going into MMA, but you have the opposite. So how has that been transitioning to more of the striking side?
It's been great. You know, it's so when I was making that transition after the 2012 Olympics, I had a couple of opportunities, from one from the WWE and one from the UFC. They had just signed their contract with Sony in India for distribution of UFC content. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for a fighter of Indian descent to be the package. And I got a call and an opportunity that, hey, this is what we want to do, coming from an Olympic wrestling background. We think this might be something you might be interested in. And for me, my mind was already made up that the Olympics was going to be my last tournament. And I was going into the fight game. I already had my eyes on this. Mm-hmm. So it was perfect. After that, we got to work. And, you know, coming from a wrestling background, I would argue it's the best background to come from.
I agree.
You can dictate, number one, where the fight goes, whether to keep it standing or take it to the ground. And just number two, you know, the system for wrestling, you get so many matches and throughout the years, you learn how to deal with the nerves and the adversity and all that type of stuff that you can only get from competing, really. So it's been great to come from that background, and I put some great guys around me. Guys, you might be familiar with the John C. Brothers.
Yeah, awesome, guys.
To polish up my striking beyond that.
So do you have nerves going into UFC 215? This is your first fight in the UFC. It's in Canada. What are your feelings like for this particular week?
I'm excited. We're finally here. I had laid out a game plan with my coaches before my first fight, that this is the timeline. This is the way we want to develop. We, in terms of regional fights, I got a little bit of everything. I fought Orthodox, I fought Southpaw guys, I fought Jiu-Jitsu specialists, I fought stand-up guys, fought an All-American wrestler. Wanted to get a little bit of feel of everything before getting into the big show. So the development went great. And this was planned, man. We were here for a reason, and I'm excited because everything went according to plan. The bigger the lights, the bigger the platform, the better I do. So I can't wait, man. I'm excited.
And what do you know about your opponent, Henrique?
He's fought a few times in the UFC. He's a Brazilian coming from a jiu-jitsu background. I've already fought two black belts at the regional level. More importantly, my training is on point, man. I split time between AKA and locally up here in Vancouver. And, you know, the way I look at it, I train every day in a cage. I've fought in a cage multiple times now. It's the same thing. I'm going to be locked in there with another man in a cage, and we're going to get to see who the better man is.
Who are some of the guys you got to train with at AKA to help you prepare?
I've been linked in with him when I've made the transition over. So for this fight, DC was getting ready for Jones, so I was in on that. And then I finished up my camp up here in Vancouver after that. But I've been going down there since I made the transition. It's been probably about 3 years now.
Because I know a lot of guys who train with DC, they say they end up leaving his camp a lot better because he's such, you know, a good role model, and seeing how hard he works, that a lot of guys come out of that camp, you know, refreshed and a lot better.
For sure, man. That type of stuff really rubs off on you, right? If you surround yourself with a world champion like that, but more importantly, he's such a great guy, right? Role model with his family and businesses and work ethic at 38 years old. You know, it's crazy. So it was a great way to kick things off for myself and have some of that stuff rub off on me for the rest of my camp.
Were you training with Kane and Justin Willis as well, like other different size heavyweights?
Yeah, they got everything. They got Todd Duffy down there. They got Kane. Willis is there. You got some Russians that always come through. So, you know, it's been great to be down there and dip into some of that over the years. It's basically what I've done is I'll go down there and jump in the cage and see where I'm at, and then I'll come back and touch things up and then go back again and done it kind of sort of that way. It's been a great measuring stick to see where I'm at in terms of development. And you know, that's why I'm so confident. I know where I'm at, and I'm good for this fight.
And so where are you at? You know, that's a question. I feel you're making your debut, but you've already have a lot of high confidence. Where do you rank yourself? You know, it's still early to say, but you've trained with a lot of the top guys. Do you see yourself making an immediate effect in the division?
For sure, I do. If you look at the heavyweight division, you know, the top five guys, you know, they're all pushing close to 40, right? And some are even over 40. So I see the division as wide open. If you look at the division, historically, the wrestlers have dominated. There's Stipe now. Before him, there was Kane. Before that, you know, Randy, Coleman, all these guys. So coming from this background, the blueprint's already laid as to what you got to do to be successful in the weight class.
And were you impressed with that Volkov-Struve fight? Is that?
Yeah, to be honest, actually, I had a send-off party here. I wasn't able to watch that. So the local community here I'm sure you guys know in Toronto there, got a banquet hall and a bunch of, you know, probably about 1,000 people or so in the community here together for an official send-off for my fight. So I wasn't able to catch the fight, no.
Yeah, one thing I do know about Sikh people is they know how to party. They know how to send people off right.
They do.
We got the open bar. We got the
you guys know how to eat.
Dinners.
Oh, I learned a lot about Indian food, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's a great culture to be a part of, my man.
So you mentioned, you know, one day hoping to become the heavyweight champion. One guy that's going to be with you, walking you out to the cage, is the heavyweight champion of the WWE, Jinder Mahal. So how did that come about?
We actually, you know what, we've known each other about 10, 12 years. So I was in university wrestling for Simon Fraser here in BC. And he was on the regional scene trying to break in as a pro for wrestling. That's when we first hooked up. And it's cool, man, because we kind of kept in touch ever since. And now I'm up in the UFC, and he's a champ out there. So it was just a natural fit with the crossover appeal and all everything that's happening in the sport right now. I thought, why not? And he's a native Albertan, born and raised in Calgary.
I saw him training with you, and he's a huge guy. He made you look like a middleweight.
Looks can be deceiving, my friend.
Yeah, do you have your way with him in training? Do you show him that size good. Doesn't matter all that much?
It was all good, man. It was fine. He was at the house, and she had a show here then, so it was great to get a workout in with him, kind of see what he does, and he picked my brain. So it was a fun thing.
I was meaning to ask you, are you related to Simbuler, the first South Asian NBA player?
Yeah. No, we're not related, but we know of each other for sure. Both those brothers have been doing great stuff out east, college ranks, pro, all that, but we're not related, but we know of each other, yes.
Yeah, he's a huge guy. I've been in person with him. He's 7'5", 360 pounds. It's no joke.
Mm-hmm. Great guy. It's true.
Awesome. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us on the show. UFC 215 this weekend from Edmonton. The debut of Arjun Buller on UFC Fight Pass. You can catch that. And, you know, if he finishes his fight quickly, maybe he'll end up on TSN in the prelim card.
That'd be awesome. That's the plan on my end.
Awesome, Arjun. Well, can't thank you enough for your time.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. Yeah. Talk soon.
Thanks, buddy. Nice to talk to you.
Arjun Buller, very excited to watch his debut at UFC 215. Having that wrestling pedigree at heavyweight is certainly going to help him a lot. You see the success of a guy like Cain Velasquez, who has the wrestling pedigree. Daniel Cormier, obviously, who spent most of his career outside of heavyweight, even though he probably could have done a lot at heavyweight, but didn't want to have to compete with his friend and training partner, Cain Velasquez. Actually, nobody really talked about how selfless that was of Cormier. That was a pretty selfless thing to do. Just put his teammate first because they're friends.
Yeah, a lot of fighters are like that. I mean, you don't want to fight your friend. I'm one of these guys. If they ask me to fight my friend, I'm not about that.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, it always comes up at some point. But, I mean, for me, most of the guys that are my friends are my training partners as well. I mean, exactly. I'm only as good as I am, if I am good at all, because I have these fantastic training partners that help me, you know, get there. Because without them, I wouldn't be able to do it, period, right? So.
Yeah, you mentioned before this interview, Rory McDonald and Stephen Thompson, they were good friends and they had to fight each other.
I mean, if you have to fight and it's a world title on the line, it's a little different, but it's hard, man. Like, I'm a martial artist, and whoever I train with, I'm friends. Like, I like training with my friends, and I surround my people with friends and positive people, so I don't want to hurt them. You know, it sucks, but I mean, if it's business, it's business, but it's definitely not something I'd be happy to do.
Yeah, it depends how close you are. I mean, sometimes you hear about guys training together. I mean, it could be just a small...
Yeah,
you know,
which is okay at that point.
You run into them, you train with them. I mean, I've had that happen a lot. That doesn't mean I wouldn't compete against them. I'd have, obviously, a lot of respect for them, but at the same time, I might compete. But if we're talking my close friends that are my training partners, absolutely not. That would never happen. And if they were the world champion and I was in that same division, I wouldn't fight them.
It's like family. Yeah.
Yeah, it just wouldn't happen. I mean,
it doesn't happen all that often anyways.
No, not at that. Yeah, it's
again, almost with GSP and Rory, it almost happened.
Yeah. But they always talked about how they weren't going to do it.
They weren't going to do it.
Yeah, like it never, I don't think it was ever that close. But Rory was coming up in the division.
Yeah,
when George
it was close
was
anyways.
Yeah, he was up there.
Regardless, it was close.
If GSP would have stuck around and not retired, who knows? Who knows where that would have gone?
Well, I'm sure someone like GSP was like a mentor to him, right? Like he was, it's funny. I met Rory when he was 13 at an event in Vancouver that I fought on. And I think it was the main event at that time. And I remember the promoter brought this young kid in. He goes, see that guy over there? And I've heard this a lot, obviously, over the years. That kid's going to be the next big thing. And I still remember we were at some meet and greet somewhere, and Roy was there, and he came up to me. He's like, yeah, you remember that day? I went there to watch you fight. And I was like, yeah. And they told me you're going to be the next big thing, and here you are, bud. Like,
yeah, that's, you know, awesome. That,
it's such
see.
An amazing yeah. story to see that, you know, it, he was that guy. So I was really happy for that.
Who were some other guys that people said was the next big thing? Are you allowed to reveal that?
Well, you know, I've just had people come up to me and say, this guy's going to be something special.
But he stood out to you.
He's certainly the guy that they're like, this kid is special, and he is for sure. He's,
absolutely.
You know, so, and that, again, it's, again, like I said, I'd heard it a lot, but certainly he was the guy who I never forgot.
Yeah. So. His last fight against Paul Daly was a clinic.
Yeah.
Oof. I was supposed to fight Paul Daly. Do you remember that, Antonio? Yes. My Glory debut, they wanted me to fight Paul Daly
really?
At Glory 5. And I messaged Antonio because I know Antonio trained with him, I think, at Mike's gym in Holland.
Yeah. I actually helped him. I helped him train to fight Jake Shields at Elite XC.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So then I messaged Antonio. I was like, he's a big boy, man. Yeah. He's like, he cuts a lot of weight. I was like, all right, cool. Let's fight.
sounds good.
Yeah,
there's the scouting report.
Yeah,
oh,
still a friend to this day. I still, you know, we'll talk to Paul. He's one of those guys who I think brings a fun style as well to the
for
cage,
sure.
right?
So that attitude, yeah. that criminal side of yeah. him that he had.
He's fighting Larkin soon. That's a tough
yes,
matchup.
Yes, again, he set that up really well after his last fight against Rory, right? That he just went out and started calling people out and making big fights happen, right?
Yeah, I don't know why he hasn't fought Michael Page yet. That seems to be the fight that keeps
falling
through.
Yeah, that was the other one. I'm sure it will happen, right? You know, maybe when they go back
in the
to
UK,
England.
It has,
maybe
happen,
because it's
right?
both stars. They don't want to put their stars together. They both have such, you know, card building abilities.
Yeah, but they also did put Rory against Daly, so that might be, and Larkin too, right? So who knows? But I think saving that for a UK card would be the obvious thing to do.
Paul is a business guy too. I mean, he as much as he's a martial artist fighter, he's got that whole persona going. He knows that, you know, how to bring on a show, and he knows
been
how
around
to make
long
money.
Enough. For
yeah,
sure.
he gets it. Like he's more than just that you know, a fighter who goes in and just tries to knock. He understands the business side of it as well.
All right, Antonio. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a lot of fun. To find out more about your gym, it's Bruckman with two N's.
Yes.
MixedMartialArts.com or do I have
it? Bruckman MMA martial. Yeah, Mixed Martial Arts. It's a gym in Oshawa in Ontario and.
Justin Bruckman.
Justin
Bruckman, guy.
He's a pioneer for the sport.
Fought
in Canada,
GSP.
Right?
Like, GSP's second ever pro opponent.
So there's a, you know,
legends.
It's funny, in this small little, you know, city in the Durham region in Ontario, we have a bunch of guys that you know, train hard. So it's a nice gym, very friendly, and but we do train hard though. That's for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely,
you got to. And you do at Bazooka,
and Bazooka
right?
Kickboxing. Yeah, I'm going to plug my gym.
Yeah, why not? I was going to say.
Yeah, Bazooka Kickboxing and MMA. We just recently had one of our fighters, Rob Thomas, have a knockout victory at Glory 44.
If you haven't seen it,
look it up on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. Look it up. Rob Thomas versus Warren Thompson. Warren Thompson was actually on season 11 of The Ultimate Fighter. So my fighter got a big knockout. We have a couple guys, Matt Special, who is a big fan of the radio show, actually. He listens, he supports, he's always commenting. So I know Matt Special is listening to that. He might be fighting in TKO December 9th.
Oh, wow, cool.
So
we'll
which
keep my
is
eyes on that one.
Huge, yeah. Matt Special, he's going to start doing well. And my business partner, Troy Sheridan, coming back. So Bazooka Kickboxing, come check us out.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you, guys. Another exciting edition of the TSN MMA show, third one in the books. Next week, we'll recap UFC 215 and talk about what went down there.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.